This is number 0076, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, once again, this is the Stuff File program, number 0076. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Mark Satterfield. He's a professional marketer and the author of Unique Sales Stories, and he's on to talk about Super Bowl ads. Are advertisers getting the bang for their buck when they spend $3 million for a 30-second spot?
The answer is yes and no. In some cases, it is a great investment. In some cases, they might as well just have lit the money on fire.
Andrew Vazakis, the night sky guy, is back to talk about a star that might just be getting ready to explode.
The explosion of this star is what they call, quote, imminent. But in astronomy jargon, imminent could be as much as a million years, so go figure.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and on this edition of Book Banter, comic Russell Peters will get us a hurting real bad with his memoir, Call Me Russell, along with a look at another memoir by another well-known Canadian-born comic. That's all happening shortly on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0076, is Simon Delorme. He's a constable with the Montreal Police Department. He was also the police partner of my best friend, Mario LeBlanc, who, if you've been paying close attention, you remember did the Slate way back on show number 0005. In the early days. Anyway, Simon is a good guy in his own right and a fun person to hang around with, and I thank Simon for taking the time to do the Slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. And as a police officer, Simon, stay safe. That's all I ask. Let's get to the Stuff File news, shall we? I don't know about you, but I'm starting to get very tired over stories about dimwits who put a little too much faith into their GPS. Here's the latest. Two British pensioners landed in hospital in southern Germany after their car's global positioning system directed them to drive into a church. Not into a churchyard, into a church. While driving their Renault in the evening on a back road near the Austrian border, the navigation system instructed the couple to turn right, which is what they decided to do even though there was no road. They were confused and didn't notice that the navigation system was faulty, a police spokeswoman said. The 76-year-old driver then plowed into the side of a village church, riding off the car, knocking a picture off the wall, and damaging the building's foundations. Gee, you know, when you consider the fact that the car's been written off and the building's foundation is damaged, was it really important to mention that a picture was knocked off the wall? Anyway, total damages were some 25,000 euros. The couple, who were traveling to France, spent the evening in hospital recuperating from minor injuries. Okay, folks, there's a windshield that supposedly you can see through while driving. Please make every attempt to use it. Thank you. On to Italy. Another story that seems to come up a lot is the stereotype of Italian men being a bit of a mama's boy. Here's the latest in that incarnation. A furious 36-year-old Italian woman has filed for divorce just a month after her wedding because her husband brought his mother on their honeymoon. As the couple set off for their honeymoon to France in December, the newlywed was shocked to find her new mother-in-law at Rome's airport all set to come on the trip. When she protested, her husband of 2 days said he couldn't leave his mother alone for health reasons. The three spent the honeymoon together, but as soon as they returned from France, the woman filed for divorce, citing, quote, an excessive emotional attachment, unquote, between her future ex-husband and his mother. Looks like she may have gotten out just in time. You know, even if he needed to bring his mother along for health reasons, which I somehow doubt, it's not something you spring up with your new bride at the airport. A little advance warning might have been helpful here. But that's just me. Okay, on to Germany. A desperate Turkish man living in Germany has turned to the police for protection from his insatiable wife's constant demands for sex. The man came to his local police station in southwestern Germany. Then he said that he had been sleeping on the sofa for the past 4 years to escape the clutches of his wife of 18 years and the mother of their two children. Now he has decided to get a divorce and to move out in the hope of finally getting some rest, particularly as he is anxious to arrive at work well-rested, police said in a statement. At the moment, this is impossible because he says his wife keeps coming into the living room demanding that he perform his marital duties. He asked for police help in getting some sleep at night. That's what the statement says. Any guys out there who want to offer a little sympathy for this guy? Crickets, yeah. I didn't think so. Moving right along, the good citizens of Chicago were not exactly in a good mood after Sunday's painful playoff loss to the Packers. So Monday morning probably wasn't the best time for car salesman John Stone to show his love for Green Bay to co-workers and customers. But the 34-year-old Mr. Stone proudly showed up for work at Webb Chevrolet wearing his green and yellow Packers necktie anyway. So they fired him. No kidding, they fired him. Webb's general manager, Jerry Roberts, says he fired Stone after he refused to remove the tie. Stone, a father of two who had worked at Webb Chevrolet for a month and a half, just a month and a half. So basically, this clown hadn't passed probation. Anyway, he grew up in Chicago's Roseland community, but he says he supported the Packers since he first saw former running back Amon Green play. Now, Roberts agreed that no customers had complained about the tie when Stone was asked to remove it, and that Stone was a good salesman who sold 14 cars last month. But, he said the tie was salting the wound of Bears fans, including himself, and that it makes it harder to sell cars in what's already a competitive sales environment. Roberts said the dealership had staged promotions involving the Bears in the past, and that he did not want to risk alienating potential customers. Here's a quote. "We spend $20,000 a month on advertising with the Bears on radio during the season, and here was a salesman openly undoing that work." He's got a point there. Anyway, Stone was offered 5 chances to take off the tie, but chose not to, according to Roberts, who added, "If he loves the tie more than his job, he's welcome to keep wearing it elsewhere." Well said. Normally I'm on the side of the little guy, you know, wearing his tie to work and all that kind of stuff. But basically, he came very close to being the idiot of the day. That's all I'm saying. But he's not. And while we're talking about football, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Sunday, February 6th, as you know, is the date for the Super Bowl, and that'll take place between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Green Bay Packers. A lot is riding on the game for the two teams involved, but there's also a lot riding on the game for advertisers. At $3 million a pop for a 30-second spot, there's a lot of money being spent on this year's Super Bowl ads. Persuasion specialist and professional marketer Mark Satterfield is the author of Unique Sales Stories. He's on to talk about whether buying an ad is a smart way to spend money. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
I'm just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. I introduced you as a persuasion specialist. I had not heard that one before.
Well, when you think about it, we are all in the persuasion business, and I'm not talking about just salespeople or business owners, but if we're a parent, we've got to persuade our children to do what we want them to do. If we're an employee, we've got to persuade our boss to give us that raise or promotion. So we're all in the persuasion business. The real key is that some of us are just better at it than others.
Okay, so on to the Super Bowl. It's the holy grail of advertising, at least in the United States. And I'm just wondering, those who are going after it, are they getting the bang for their buck?
The answer is yes and no. In some cases, it is a great investment. In some cases, they might as well just have lit the money on fire. A case where it is a great investment is GoDaddy. What GoDaddy does very well is they create an ad that has got a very intriguing story. And I'm a big believer that the most effective ads are the ones that tell the best stories. And the GoDaddy ad has different scenarios, different stories. One of the very popular ones from last year's Super Bowl was Danica Patrick, the race car driver, is have a day at the spa, and all of a sudden her masseuse starts to audition to be a GoDaddy girl. And the story ends right at the climax of will she, you know, what's going to happen next? She's taken off her, you know, she's taken off her professional robe, and she's dressed there in the GoDaddy t-shirt, and the call to action, and this is the beauty of the ad, and this is where it pays off for them, is that it was go to GoDaddy to find out more. And one thing that GoDaddy does a great job of is developing an incredibly effective website so that when you go there, not only do you hear the rest of the story, but you're also encouraged to register your name for a URL. And once you do that, then there's all sorts of upsells. So for them, it's a big home run.
Okay, so there's a unique situation in a company like GoDaddy because they are in the business of being online savvy because that's where their business is. But when it comes to general products that are sold in the Super Bowl, do they sometimes miss their mark because they're not as savvy at getting somebody to go to a website like a GoDaddy is?
Absolutely, and there are hits and misses there as well. For example, it's my opinion that Coca-Cola does not do as much with their ads as they possibly could. They run the ads, they spend the money, but it's just to kind of create general awareness for the Coca-Cola brand. But they don't really do much more than that. Now, you compare that with Budweiser. Budweiser also runs branding advertising. It increases the visibility of Budweiser and Bud Light. But the other thing that they do is that they incorporate it into a whole Super Bowl promotion. So they've got their sales reps out at the restaurants and the bars getting everyone excited about the forthcoming ads that are going to appear. So there's a motivation for the sales team itself as well as making the customer now feel like they're a part of the Super Bowl because they are consuming Anheuser-Busch products. So they integrate the ad with other kinds of marketing activities, and that's the key with any kind of good marketer.
Okay, so again, going back to GoDaddy, You tout them as a success story. Can you give me an example of a very expensive swing and a miss?
Oh, well, just list you list all of the dot-coms during the dot-com boom, and you had some, you know, all of them pretty much had the same message of, look at me, I've got money to burn, I'm on the internet, wow. And there wasn't any follow-up. When you did go to their website, which makes the GoDaddy even more impressive, there wasn't any call to action, there wasn't any engagement, and you know, those dot-coms went out of business, and probably spending the $1 million on the Super Bowl ads help accelerate that.
One of the other things I've noticed as a trend in the last couple of years is someone advertising the fact that they wanted to be on the Super Bowl, but their ads were too risque and therefore they were turned down. They seem to get a lot of buzz a week or two before the game because they're not going to be in the Super Bowl, but they're more than happy to put their ads someplace like online where you can see what you won't see during the game.
Yeah, that's a pretty good marketing pitch. You know, if only they would allow me to do this, and then I would. But you can go online to see it. Actually, GoDaddy did it with their spot called "Is It Too Hot?" And they actually had an online version and an offline and a TV version. And the TV version again was promoting people to go see the more riskier version that was online.
Why do you think it is that, as a population, we seem to be adverse to wanting to watch commercials. We might complain about commercials. We have PVR so we could zip through commercials. But when it comes to the Super Bowl, we seem to spend more time concerning ourselves with the commercials than sometimes the game.
Oh, I mean, that is so terribly true. I mean, my wife is probably pretty typical. She watches a grand total of zero football games during the year, but you can't tear her away during the Super Bowl. I mean, she'll actually leave during the game, but she'll stick there during the commercials. I think in part it's a credit to the advertising industry, because a lot of very good creative, fun, interesting, and memorable ads have debuted on the Super Bowl. And it probably goes back to that ad that ran one time for Apple Computer, where you had the woman who was, you had the drones of people marching in file, and you had the woman who threw the hammer to celebrate the freedom from traditional constraints around computers by introducing the Macintosh. And that was just so, oh, wow, I can't believe that, that it got people excited about, hey, what else is going to be here? And by and large, the Super Bowl does not disappoint us. By and large, there's always some ads that make for great water cooler conversation the next day.
Yeah, that Apple commercial was quite Orwellian in its nature, and the fact that it only ran once made it very, very special.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it really does stand out as one of the all-time one of the all-time benchmarks of Super Bowl advertising.
I guess some credit has to also go to the NFL for the way they have hyped this game over the years to become the premier event that it is. No other sport really can generate this kind of attention for a one-off event the way the Super Bowl can, which will draw that kind of advertising dollars for a 30-second spot.
That is so true, and they've just done a marvelous job with it. It really has created another American holiday, and on a scale to rival any of the traditional ones. The only question that I'm always asking is, why don't they move it to Saturday night, so that we then don't have to get up at the crack of dawn on Monday morning when we're all bleary eyed from watching the game? Why don't they move it to Saturday so we can celebrate in good stead?
You may have a good marketing point there. Speaking of which, I want to mention very quickly that you have a website called GentleRainMarketing.com, and I love the name of that company. I want to get to that in a second. But you also have a book called Unique Sales Stories. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it ties actually into what we're talking about today. I think all the great advertisements, those that really move the dial in terms of getting us more customers, getting us more clients, the ads that actually do generate sales, not just a water cooler talk, those ads all have stories behind them. And I think in the area of persuasion, as I mentioned before, some of us are great at persuasion, some of us aren't. And the real key, if you want to get people to do what you want them to do, you got to learn how to tell great stories. And in my book, I give you a very simple three-step process for creating stories, as well as lots and lots of examples. So although the book was written primarily with salespeople and business owners in mind, the lessons are applicable to all of us.
And the company name, Gentle Rain Marketing?
The idea behind Gentle Rain is that when we're trying to do business with people, we, of course, first want to get their initial attention, but then we want to stay in touch with them with ongoing messages, gentle raindrops, if you will. So, again, if you look at some of these very successful Super Bowl advertising campaigns, what you notice is the ones that were most successful were those that got people initially interested and curious with the ad, but then they had an ongoing process for staying in touch with their people, engaging their people. And that's what we do at Gentle Rain Marketing, is figure out how do we get people excited about our particular products or services, and then how do we construct an ongoing series of messages so that we build trust, we build credibility, and then eventually, of course, get people to invest in our products or services.
So I take it, by the way, you'll be all ready and tuned up for the Super Bowl game Sunday, February the 6th?
Absolutely.
Do you have a horse in this race?
Yeah, well, our Atlanta Falcons got beaten, so we're out of it. So I'm a little bit torn. On one hand, I want revenge against the Green Bay Packers. On the other hand, as Mom used to always tell me, you root for the team that beat you to go on all the way, because what would be the point of being beaten by the team that then went on and only did second place? So I'm torn.
And therein lies another good marketing point. Mark, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Marketer Mark Satterfield, author of Unique Sales Stories. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, click on the Stuff File program, and then go to the episode number for this show, which is show number 0076, and you'll find links to Mark's website, which is gentlerainmarketing.com, and also to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy. He's on to talk about an exploding star. And we'll hear from Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter, plus, of course, an idiot of the day. And you always get more Stuff File news. You know that. More right here, right now. A 41-year-old woman arrested in Callaway, Florida in December for beating her husband with a rock explained that she was angry that he was endangering his health by smoking despite being ill. She said, "A woman can only take so much." Yes, spousal-induced brain cell-killing concussions are much better than smoking, aren't they? Mm-hmm. And the staff at a Ukraine aquarium didn't believe it when a visitor said a crocodile swallowed her phone. But then the reptile started ringing. The story is reminiscent of Peter Pan, in which a crocodile happily went tick-tock after gulping down an alarm clock. Anyway, Gina, the 14-year-old croc who swallowed the phone, the experience has hardly been a fairy tale for her or him. He hasn't eaten or gone number two in 4 weeks and appears to be depressed and in pain. That's a quote, because I don't necessarily use the term number two. I can say defecate. I'm an adult. Anyway, the visitor who lost the phone said she had stretched out her arm trying to snap a photo of Gina opening his mouth when the phone slipped in. Surgically removing the phone would be the last resort, since incisions and stitches usually take at least 3 weeks to heal in reptiles, and the procedure is dangerous for the animal and for the vets. In the meantime, aquarium vets are continuing to monitor Gina, you know, wouldn't it be great if they could change the ringtone to Crocodile Rock by Elton John and then just call the phone all day? That'd be kind of cool. Anyway, in England, Leon Ingram is 34 and stands at 6'4". Doris Thiel is, on the other hand, 84 years old and stands at 5'3". So who would you bet on? Go with Doris. That's a hint. After Ingram broke into her home and tried to rob her, Doris beat him about the head for 8 minutes while her 59-year-old daughter Helen held him in a headlock. Terrified, Ingram finally got away and smashed his way through the front door with his head. Of course, that meant he left a lovely trail of blood to a nearby flat where he was arrested. Feisty Doris said, "I hope this sends a strong message to other burglars. If someone else comes, they'll get more of the same." She and Helen won police bravery awards for their actions. Ingram, who's a heroin addict and has had 32 previous criminal convictions, got himself another 3 years in prison after confessing. Now, what I'd like to know is, how does someone who has 32 previous criminal convictions get back out on the street? Isn't this the ultimate case of locking up somebody and throwing away the key? Works for me. 32 convictions. I consider that habitual. Why are we letting him out? Anyway, moving right along, in Abington, Massachusetts, 23-year-old Leo J. Powers is being charged with creating bombs at his home, fortunately not to hurt people, but rather to blow up snowbanks to avoid shoveling the snow. How lazy can one really be? Powers says he's been doing it for a while. He's been charged with threats to commit a crime and possession of incendiary devices. He also had to surrender all his weapons to police, and they revoked his firearms license to carry. Meanwhile, police are investigating where he got all the weapons they confiscated and also the bomb-making materials. Powers says he got all the stuff at a gun show. Blowing up snowbanks to avoid shoveling. Gee, I'd hate to see how he goes fishing. Anyway, drug smugglers trying to get marijuana across the Arizona-Mexico border are apparently going old school. We mean really old school. Like medieval old school. National Guard troops operating a remote video surveillance system at the Naco Border Patrol Station said that they observed several people preparing a large catapult. Yes, a catapult. And launching packages over the international border fence. The National Guard contacted Mexican authorities, who went to the location and broke up the catapult operation. The smugglers fled before they could be captured, but Mexican officials seized about 45 pounds of marijuana, an SUV, and, of course, the catapult. Naco is about 80 miles southeast of Tucson. It also rhymes with taco. Where did they get a catapult? Did they buy it from Acme? Wile E. Coyote would be so proud. And we have time for one more story in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You might say they're dressed to drill. In Germany, dentist Marie Catherine Klarkowski has a novel way of distracting patients while she works on their teeth. She's ordered low-cut dresses for herself and her nurses. Dr. Marie said that she came up with the idea after watching the way male visitors to the local Oktoberfest enjoyed looking at the traditional low-cut barmaid dresses. So she ordered for herself and her 10 nurses similar frilled blouses in the same style with low-cut cleavages and tight bodices that make it work like a push-up bra. Dr. Marie explained, "The most important thing for us is to take away the patient's fear. The sight of cleavage gets patients narcotized and distracted from the pain rather quickly." She added, "Some patients' mouths are already wide open when entering the practice, and that is just what a dentist wants." Oh, and since word has gotten out, she's increased her patient list by 33%. All males. Does she have any female patients? Anyway, speaking of heavenly bodies, let's get to our next guest. Oh, there's another subtle segue for you. Several online news sites, including the Huffington Post, have reported that the star Betelgeuse will undergo a supernova explosion in the next year. Yes, that's 2012, shining brightly in the sky as a second sun. So now, all amount of panic seems to have started, yet I can tell you that it's probably not going to happen, and even if it did, not to worry. Joining us via Skype-to-Skype communication is Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, who is here once again to set us straight about astronomy. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the show. So what is this whole story? And I read it and said, oh my gosh, it's going to take place. And all I kept thinking is the doomsdayers who are going to say, see, I told you it was going to happen, and panic would ensue. But it's much ado about nothing, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it definitely, this is an event that will happen, but chances are that it could happen, you know, as far away as a million years from now, as, you know, as much of a chance as it could happen next year. That's true. Astronomers just do not know when the star Betelgeuse will explode as a supernova. We can't tell that. We, you know, astronomers announced this month that in their studies, they think that the star will, the explosion of the star is what they call, quote, imminent. But in astronomy jargon, imminent could be as much as a million years. So go figure.
Okay, so let's play to the Chicken Little crowd out there and go on the assumption that 2012 is when this will happen, which you and I tend to agree is not. But let's say it does. What does that mean for planet Earth?
Well, you know, thankfully, this star is at a very respectable distance. Betelgeuse is about 640 light years away. So this is a very respectable distance in terms of any kind of effect that it could give us would equate to something very minimal. What it would produce is indeed a very impressive light show in the night sky. Betelgeuse right now is ranked as the 10th brightest star in the entire night sky, and so it's the 10th brightest in terms of what you can see with the naked eye. It's considered a red giant star near the end of its life, and astronomers do know that it will go supernova, which means that it will explode when it dies. And when that happens, it will brighten very, very quickly, and will become the brightest object after the sun in the sky that we can see.
Now, when I was reading
the moon, I should say that
when I was reading some of the articles that first touted this, including the Huffington Post, one of the things, and this is why I wanted to talk to you, because going on the assumption that it could happen in the next year, it was not something I was overly worried about, but I was concerned about what it said it was going to look like, and that is, it would look like daytime at nighttime. It would be that bright, and all I kept thinking is, no matter how many times you talk about this publicly on radio and television, online and newspapers, there's going to be a whole host of people who pay no attention to mainstream media, and when it took place, would panic because it didn't get dark.
That's right. I mean,
will it be that bright?
Well, no, it won't. It won't become. You know, a lot of the claims say that it'll become a second sun, right, in the sky, and that's pretty much false. It is going to get bright, but it's not going to fry us or anything like that. It won't be bright enough. It's going to appear probably, you know, the estimates range, but difference, you know, maybe as much as a crescent moon or a full moon, maybe a little bit even more than that. So it could outshine potentially the moon even. So if it does explode, or humans are around, it's going to put on a very impressive, it'll probably frighten people. I mean, if it would explode next year, I'm sure people, it would frighten the folks that don't know what's going on. But I think it would be very impressive because it would cast shadows. You could probably read the newspaper by the light of of exploding Betelgeuse, you know, when it goes supernova. So it will be an impressive light show, and it's going to wreak havoc with the local interstellar space that makes up the Orion constellation, definitely. But it's nothing that we should be really fearing. And, you know, a lot of the websites and news wires are, you know, touting this of, you know, connecting it to the doomsday apocalypse of 2012. But, you know, I think that's completely wrong. So you can breathe a sigh of relief. It should be fine.
Oh, I was never worried about, as you said earlier, being fried, but I was looking for a really good light show. Now, having said that, what about long-term effects? If this thing explodes, as you say, particles will be scattered everywhere. Should we have to be worried about things like, I'm not talking about the radiation factor of it, I'm not even concerned about that, but telecommunication satellites, stuff like that?
There could be effects. I mean, there is a lot of radiation that's produced through supernovas, but to really have an effect, the star would have to be a lot closer. A lot of the estimates, if there were any kind of technological effects, it would have to the beams of the radiation would have to be directed in the general vicinity of the Earth, and that could affect like telecommunications, you know, satellite communications, our cell phone signals could potentially be interrupted. There is a chance for that. Circuit boards fried on satellite, but the danger of that is very minimal, and the star would have to be probably much closer, somewhere around 30 to 50 light years away from Earth, which there are no stars that fit the bill that would go supernova at that range. So we're pretty much safe, and it'll just produce a really nice light show.
Now, the star Betelgeuse, compare it to our sun. How does it compare in size?
It is a monster. It's an amazing star. You know, first off, I think it's the you know, if it's somewhere around 20 times larger than than our own sun. So if you would say replace the sun with Betelgeuse at the center of our solar system, the edge of the star would reach out to the orbit of Jupiter, which means that Earth would be, you know, a block of cinder in the center of inside the atmosphere of the star. So Betelgeuse is a monster-sized star. And it's these type of stars that are 10 to 20 times larger than our sun that do have enough mass to actually explode. They implode, actually. They collapse on itself. Once the fuel, which is hydrogen and helium gases at the center of the star, gets exhausted, the gravity basically takes over and crushes the star. And in that process, there's a huge amount of energy that's built up at the center of the star, and it just basically explodes at that point.
Like our sun, is there anything rotating or revolving around, orbiting around Betelgeuse?
Not that we really can see, but what's very interesting is that the latest studies on Betelgeuse show it's one of the only stars that we can actually see surface details. We actually see spots, star spots, like sunspots on this star, because it just simply is so huge that our largest telescopes are now able to resolve surface features on this star. And so it's really revealing a lot of the inner clockwork of what makes a star tick, and Betelgeuse is a great example. And by the way, Peter, you can see Betelgeuse as a really beautiful orange red color star in the constellation Orion right now in winter. It's high in the sky, and it's sort of the upper left corner of Orion. What you look for is three stars that make up the belt of Orion. And they're very prominent, these three horizontal stars in the southern sky in the mid-evening time period. And then to the upper left of those three stars, you'll see an orange, very, very bright orange star. And that's Betelgeuse. You can see it. Despite it being 600 light years away, it still burns like an orange beacon because of its monstrous size.
Now, is there any residual effect to something that large just simply blowing up? And the other point I wanted to bring up too, it was talking about the fact that with this thing blowing up that it would look like day at nighttime, and that could last as long as 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's right. If we're talking about a supernova explosion coming from Betelgeuse, the light show would last for anywhere from a week to a month, where we would see this bright beacon, you know, I mean, it, and casting shadows in the middle of the night. And what's really interesting is that that light show, that explosion that occurs, we would able to, you know, through large telescopes, we would be able to follow the actual explosion of how it unfolds, the resulting cloud that forms, the nebula that forms. And at a very interesting point, talking about residual effects of a supernova explosion like this, this is where all the heavy metals that we have here on Earth were once formed in a supernova like that Betelgeuse will undergo. So metals like gold, silver, nickel, copper, all of these metals were once formed at the center of a supernova explosion. And we can thank supernova explosions that we're here now. The iron in our blood that flows through our blood was once formed at the center of a supernova explosion. It's only through a supernova explosion that we can form these kind of elements in the universe. So it's a sort of like a rejuvenation of the universe when a supernova explodes. So it's an amazing recycling of elements that happens during such an event.
I look forward to putting the explosion of Betelgeuse into my agenda.
That's right. Mark it down in your calendar anywhere between now and a million years from now. There you go.
Andrew, always a pleasure to talk to you. How can people find you?
People can visit me on my website, thenightskyguy.com, or watch me on the Weather Network every Friday nights on the Night Sky episodes I do.
Thank you very much, sir.
Clear skies.
Andrew Fizakis, the Night Sky Guy. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. And, of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico-Jones. I just finished watching a video that looked like a slow-motion scene in a slapstick Three Stooges movie. It was hilarious, but I couldn't bring myself to laugh. Why? I kept thinking about how much it cost me. And not only me, but consumers all over America. You see, the video I was watching was taken with surveillance cameras. The people on the video were staging fake slip-and-fall accidents with the intention of suing the property owners for thousands of dollars. In one case, a woman in a grocery store smeared water on the floor with her foot and slowly sat down in it. I guess we could call this a sit-and-fall. Before calling for help, she even adjusted her hair so it would look just right. The video camera caught it all. Let's be fair, this would be funny if it wasn't so serious. But a report from the National Insurance Crime Bureau reveals that this kind of lawsuit abuse and insurance fraud costs American consumers $30 billion a year. And just think about how much fraud the video cameras don't see. Learn more. Go to my website at bobdirigojones.com.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed have Stuart Nolman. This is another edition of Book Banter. Hello, Stuart.
Hello, Peter, and be careful because someone's going to get a hurting real bad.
Are you threatening people again, Stuart? Is that what's going on?
Oh, yes, and I have to thank Russell Peters for that, a little bit of intimidation.
Ah, yes.
And, well, speaking of Russell, I mean, I've seen Russell perform at Just for Laughs for well over a decade, and he's good. I've got to know him pretty well. He's a good guy. Always calls me Stu New for some reason, but he has a tendency for nicknames with everyone he meets, so I guess my little badge of honor, thanks to Russell Peters, is Stu New.
I have one, too, but I can't repeat it on the program.
This is a family show.
Yes, yes, it is. But he has one for me as well. But anyway, let's just move on.
So that's why I'm mentioning with Russell Peters and this edition of Book Banter is because we're going to review his autobiography called Simply Call Me Russell. Okay, Russell. So after breaking into the stand-up comedy business over 20 years ago, this native from Brampton, Ontario, and the son of Anglo-Indian immigrants, has managed to become a huge success story. His shows have played to sold-out crowds in major venues like the Air Canada Centre and Madison Square Garden. He's performed around the world. His two comedy DVDs are major bestsellers. And right now, as we speak, Russell is in the midst of developing a sitcom for NBC. But however, through all his hard-earned success, Peter sees himself as a reluctant success story. And in turn, he sees himself as a reluctant memoirist, believing there is more to do and more to accomplish before the Russell Peters story can fully be told. Maybe that's why his memoir, Call Me Russell, works quite a lot. Basically, Peters broke into stand-up comedy as a means of building self-confidence. While growing up in Brampton during the 70s and 80s, Peters not only had to endure attention deficit disorder, he had to face the pain of bullying and racial prejudice, the shame of being transferred to a trade school, at the end of grade 10 because a guidance counselor misjudged that Russell was a slow learner and took up boxing in order to learn how to defend himself. So Peters was able to count on the faith of and love of a small nuclear family, his late father Eric, whose quick, sharp wit became the inspiration for many of Russell's ethnic-based routines and the famous line, someone's going to get a hurting real bad, his mother Maureen, and especially his older brother Clayton, who not only protected him while growing up, but is now his manager and runs the company that manages Peter and a stable of other comedians as well. But of course, like any book dealing with stand-up comedy, Call Me Russell recalls its share of road stories, whether it be dealing with a fan who projectile vomited on the stage during taping of his outsourced DVD or being punked by King Abdullah of Jordan. These road stories give Peters the opportunity to tell his readers and aspiring comics that the world of stand-up comedy, no matter which level of success, can be fun, adventurous, frustrating, and sometimes even dangerous. Just ask Peters when he relates the story, but when he actually drove his SUV into one of the worst sections of Durban, South Africa, in the dead of night. Hmm. Call Me Russell is a memoir that's written with a great deal of honesty and insight. It's a portrait of probably one of Canada's most inspiring success stories in the fiercely competitive world of stand-up comedy. And although Russell Peters is now enjoying the trappings of this success, he has never forgotten the hard road he took to get there and how he has used comedy not only to sensitize people to racial diversity and prejudice, but also to overcome personal adversity as well. Not bad for someone who, when he started as a comic, was regarded himself as a 19-year-old smartass.
Very smart, though. Very, very smart.
Yeah, he certainly is. And also, if you want to read another memoir by a well-known Canadian-born comic, may I recommend Howie Mandel's book called Here's the Deal, Don't Touch Me, which... It is a comic memoir, but it focuses a lot on his germophobia and why he reached that point of being germophobic. But it's not a book of just road stories. It's a really well-written book, and I was very surprised of how he comes to terms with his germophobia and also why he does a lot of his famous routines, like the famous glove over the head routine. But, you know, pretty good book. I do recommend it, but you don't need to have rubber gloves to use while reading the book and turning the pages. That's totally unnecessary.
Okay. And by the way, if you get a Kindle, no more page turning. There you go.
Exactly. So problem solved.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Russell Peters, for those who want to see an interview that I did with Russell several years ago on the old television show I hosted, Soul Call, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com and just click on the YouTube link. My YouTube link, and it'll take you to two Russell Peters interviews that I did on the old Soul Call show. So there you go. Just want to put that out there. If people want to find you, Stuart, how can they go about doing so?
Well, you could easily go online at www.westendtimes.ca, and you can read my Book Banter column right there, besides listening to here on the Stuff File as well.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nullman and Book Banter here on The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're in the home stretch of this edition of The Stuff File program. We're getting dangerously close to this week's Idiot of the Day. But I got a couple more Stuff File stories to share with you before we get to that point. Stephanie Moreland, age 46, was arrested in Bloomington, Minnesota for allegedly shoplifting at the Alaskan Fur Company. Now, the store said she had taken a $6,500 coat, which Moreland denied. But when police found the hanger for the coat in her car, she was arrested. After 3 days in jail, and that number is important, folks, she spent 3 days in jail. You following along? After 3 days in jail, Moreland admitted to the detective that she had taken the coat, but that she had already sold it. Okay, so after further questioning, Moreland admitted she still had the coat. Did I mention she was in jail for 3 days already? Yeah. She then pulled the coat out of her underwear. She had modified her underwear, according to a police spokesperson. Now, the 270-pound woman actually cut the rear of the underwear out so that from the back it appeared that she was not wearing underwear, but then stuffed it down the front. And it stayed there for the 3 days she was in custody. Ew! I'm guessing the resale value of that coat has dropped dramatically. Anyway. On to least competent criminals in the ouch division. You know, thieves often leave police trackable trails from the scene of the crime to their home. But for alleged shoplifter Michael Barton, age 29, of Venango County, Pennsylvania, the trail was of his own blood, starting at the Walmart where he cut himself badly, removing razor blades from their packages in order to fit more of them into his pocket. Nice going there, Slick. Smooth shave. Yeah. He almost made the Idiot of the Week, but he didn't. That's coming up in just a matter of moments. On to Australia. Police in Brisbane thought it necessary to advise the public that inflatable sex dolls are not recognized flotation devices. Gee, you wouldn't think you'd have to tell somebody that, huh? Anyway, a man and a woman, both 19, were using blow-up dolls to float down a river and had made it past Pond Bend Tunnel when the woman was bucked off her toy by rough water and had to be rescued. Now, the area, if you've been following the news, has seen significant flooding recently, and police were not amused by the couple's antics. According to Senior Constable Wayne Wilson, "We've got people busy with rescues, and to have to divert resources to that sort of thing is not ideal." Anticipating the next question, he added, "The fate of the inflatable dolls is unknown." Actually, I can think of several questions to ask before I got to that one, but okay, let's stick with that one. You know, again, these two clowns almost made it to Idiot of the Day, but they did not. But these three people did.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Here's a pro tip for you. You really don't want to pour gasoline directly into your carburetor while driving down the highway. There's a teensy-weensy chance it could catch on fire. In Bellevue, Washington, two men and a woman were having trouble keeping their Ford Econoline van running, so they went to a gas station to get gas. Having no gas can, they made the insane decision to fill an open bucket with 2 gallons of gas. They then removed the engine cowling between the two front seats of the van and used a water bottle to transfer gas from the bucket directly into the carburetor in order to keep the engine running as they drove along. Now, the van, which by this time was now full of gas fumes, stalled again. As they tried to restart it, the van exploded. One witness said the whole van was engulfed in red flames. The people were saying, "Honey, I love you. Are you okay? Stay calm." The two men jumped out in flames and ran toward a gas station, desperate to get their fires out. One man made it to the gas station and tried to douse himself with water. They never learned the drop and roll technique, I guess. Anyway, firefighters were able to get the van fire out within minutes, and medics took the three victims to Harborview Medical Center. Two were seriously burned, and a third suffered minor burns. Now, why would you pour gasoline directly into the carburetor of a vehicle that you're actually driving in while it's moving? Well, actually, in this case, there are two reasons this time. One, you failed high school physics and chemistry. And two, you're an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0076. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, which is 0076. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and at Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air at World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.